Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How to Reverse Engineer Your PR and Always Have Publicity That Stacks in Your Favor. Public relations expert Robert has worked with the greats, J. Conrad Levinson, Chet Holmes, J. Abraham, Les Brown, the list goes on. And it's little wonder. He says when it comes to publicity, you've got to be like the house in Vegas and stack the odds in your favor. In other words, stop guessing at PR when you can use strategies that make results mathematically yours. And in this two-part audio interview, you'll hear exactly how to get them. Robert says that usually involves reverse engineering your public relations. Basically, that means you should stop sending out formal press releases that beg Oprah to run your story. But what you do instead is find out what kind of stories Oprah is running first, then figure out how to fit it in. Don't waste money buying hotel space and airfare for your next seminar. Run a quick $60 publicity campaign and find out if you can fill spots in that city first. It's a new way to look at publicity that's easier, smarter, and more effective. And in this two-part audio interview, Robert walks you through it all. Part one is called The Three Easy Ways to Sell Yourself for Publicity. If you've never been on TV before, Robert says you're missing out. It's not only fun, but it also bumps up your credibility instantly because if CNBC thinks you're an expert, you're an expert. The best part of that kind of publicity is it's free and could mean thousands in quick profits. And Robert says it's easier than you think to get in a magazine, newspaper, or on a show, too. But that's just one of three ways you can sell yourself for free. And in part one of this audio, you'll get a step-by-step look at all three ways. You'll also hear how to use joint ventures with your PR. You'll hear all about the joint venture that changed Robert's life, and the guy didn't even get his name right, how he landed it, what terms he negotiated, and how much he made. You'll hear the fastest known way to be on a national talk show. You'll hear the beauty of piggybacking, what that means, and examples of how to do it for free. You'll get an insider's look at how Robert nailed his biggest clients and how he delivers on their huge publicity expectations and how you can do that too. You also learn the two almost always overlooked things that you must be aware of to avoid letting the clock run out on your PR. Now let's get going. Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive.
Hello, it's Robert.
Hey, Robert. Mike Senoff here.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
How are you?
I'm good, man.
Long time no talk.
Right, man. A long time.
We go back and forth over the years a little bit. I hear from you or you'll hear from me. And I got your thank you email. And, you know, I love it when I get emails like this. And you said something like, you got your first $1 million client. And you wanted to thank me because it couldn't have been possible without some of the stuff I provide and some of the interviews. So why don't you tell me what have some of these interviews meant for you? And then I want to get into where you are, what you've been doing for the last 10 years. Talk about your climb to the first $1 million client, and we'll share that with the listeners and paint a picture of what Robert's been doing all these years and what makes you so good at it. Would that be all right?
No problem at all.
First of all, when did your journey for, I guess, personal growth in business begin? Can you remember how you first found out about my site and talk about what that experience was like?
No problem. I guess my very first business, I was 22, and I graduated with a paralegal degree, couldn't find a job. I saw an ad in the back of a small business opportunity magazine. There was an ad in the back that said, start your own child support collection franchise. So I figured, okay, well, I got a paralegal degree. Maybe it'll correlate. So I took my tax refund, It was $600. I got trained and licensed in that. A month after I joined that franchise, I branched out on my own because what I found out was they were paying me $75 commission for everybody I got to come in the door, and they were charging $400 for maybe a modification or $600 for another service. No matter what I charged, they would only send me $75, and then they were late sending me that. So I thought, well, whatever they're doing there where I'm sending this paperwork, you know, I know how to use the law library. I am a paralegal. Well, let me figure out how to do what they were doing. And so a month later, I started my own child support collection business. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I need to learn about advertising. I need to learn about marketing. So I would go to the library. I would read these magazines. Lo and behold, there's an ad in the magazine by a guy named Jay Abraham. So I read it, and then I scroll down to see how much he's charging. He wanted 100 people to pay him $9,000 to be mentored by him. And I'm like, wow, this guy's looking you in the face and ripping you off. And I told Jay this story, too. That was my first introduction to him. So what I started doing then was, this is the Internet, I started searching for him, trying to see if I could find some free stuff. I mean, this guy's charging $9,000. I mean, you know, he must be pretty good. So I started trying to find free stuff I could get. There were different things you can get, newsletters. I got all of his reports, a couple of tapes and some cassette tapes. They were still making cassette tapes. So I got all of this stuff free. And I ended up coming across your site, because it was used Jay Abraham's materials, I believe. So anyway, when I was searching for him, I came across your site. And so that kind of led me to you. And then I saw all the other stuff, and I'm like, okay, you can learn about telemarketing, cold calling, sales, joint ventures. It's like you cover every aspect of business. And that was a problem I think most business owners have when they first start out, is we don't know what we don't know. We get into like a lane or a tunnel vision, and we don't understand there's other aspects in business that you need to know. And that's what I liked, again, about your site was it wasn't just marketing. It wasn't just managing. It wasn't just outsourcing. It wasn't just one particular thing, which isn't bad, but you need a lot of other things. And then you weren't charging for it. I'm like, this guy is crazy. You can listen to this stuff, get your world-class education from experts who are on the front lines, who knows what it takes, who knows what they're doing. And it was all free. And at that time, you were sending out CDs. I don't even know if you're still doing that or not. You could get an audio CD.
Yeah, I was sending out a free CD. It started at 21 hours, my best interviews, and it went to 40, and then 61 hours. Did you ever get one of those?
Yeah, I used to do it in my car.
That's right. I had a CD with all the MP3s backed on it. Let me ask you this. How did it go with the collections for back child support with that franchise?
What happened with that was, I actually did pretty well out of the gate because the child support system in Illinois was terrible. So it didn't take a lot to be successful in that business here. There was $1 billion owed in child support, and that's how I made the transition to doing PR, is because I did my own publicity for the child support business. I remember the headline of my very first press release. I wrote it was $1 billion owed in unpaid child support in the state of Illinois. And I sent it to all three of our local TV stations. I got two of them to come out and do a story on me. Then I put two and two together. Whenever I got this free publicity in the media, the phones would ring. So in my mind, okay, that was free advertising. Then I got the stats for all the other states. California was $5 billion. New York, $10 billion. Only thing I did was change the headline. The rest of the story was the same. So that's how I got picked up in all of these other different places.
Hey, have you seen the new recent H&R Block national advertising?
Yeah, about the money people leave.
Yeah, how people leave $1 billion in uncollected taxes.
Yeah, and the thing about that is H&R Block, as big a company as they are, they either have a PR department or they have a PR firm that they're working with. That money that they're spending in advertising, they could do the same thing and get on all the major talk shows. They can be on all the major news media and be interviewed because that's a newsworthy story. And I have yet to see them do that, the editorial route. I see the commercials all of the time, but me with my PR cap thinking, why don't they just get on CNN or some of these talk shows and tell people how to save money or get more of that money back? Because there isn't a media outlet around that won't pick up on that story.
What could you make with the franchise if you collected, say, $10,000 in back child support for a mother who has children? How much would you get to keep it at?
The standard rate was 30%. Just like a typical collection agency. But I'll tell you a neat story of how I put all of this, because remember the child support franchise, they didn't teach marketing at all. They taught you a little bit about the child support, the problem, and the opportunity. So what I did was, I learned this from Dan Kennedy, I kind of reverse engineered it. I was like, okay, who's my best or my ideal client? it's going to be a single mother. You know, out of 450 cases, I had one guy where he wanted to hire me to go after the ex-wife for child support. So 99% of the time, it's a single woman. So I bought a mailing list of single women between 21 and 38 with at least one child that made between $25,000 and I think $50,000 a year. And I kind of just hand-drew the perfect prospect, because what happens is if their income was too low, they qualify for public assistance, so they would automatically take over and they wouldn't have to pay. If they had a lot of money, they just hire an attorney, their divorce attorney, or they hire a collections attorney to do it for them. So I found a nice little sweet spot combining that with some of the direct mail principles on building a mailing list. And then I would do postcard mailings. I did telemarketing and, of course, PR, because I was in newspapers and magazines.
What was that income level, the magic sweet spot?
Between like $25,000 to $40,000 a year. I only charged a $25 application fee. Then it depended on what they needed done. Some of them, you know, you had to do a modification. The court order was outdated. Many had the garnishments or the court orders. They just had nobody to collect it. So that's kind of how that went.
How did the direct mail campaign go when you mailed out to that list? How much mail were you mailing out to that list?
That is so funny, because I look back. I guess I would have had to have been 23, maybe 24 years old. And I would go to, there was a store here in the Chicago area called Media Play. And I guess the nearest thing to them that you guys would recognize would be like a Best Buy. And they had in their book section postcards that are already in a book. You can just tear them out. So I found postcards that had children on them, and I would rip them out. And on the back, I would handwrite, "Are you owed child support? Give us a call." So I would handwrite 40 or 50 of those a night till my hands got tired, and I'd mail them off. Wasn't sophisticated at all. I didn't know anything about their printers that you can get postcards. Now you got Vistaprint. Now there are a lot of things you can do, but this is what I did. They were already pre-printed. I just had to handwrite on the back my message, and that's what I did. And if I mailed out 20 postcards, I probably got 4 or 5 responses. I remember a lady at the post office called me, because you know when you mail the postcards, they go through the post office. A lady took the card to the side and said she needed help with child support. She wrote my number down and then put the postcard back through the system.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Well, I'll tell you, the way you did it would work just as well today. Handwritten, homesy, personal postcard like that. That is the exact way to go, a handwritten message, which is so rare today.
I had a client say this to me, too, a lot of times, especially like if you're young starting out, is a combination of ignorance and guts. You don't know any better.
Tell me how that business looked with the combination of the direct mail and the postcards and the fees you were charging and PR, and I want to separate what you really liked about the PR part of it. How did that business grow? And how long did you do it for, and what happened?
Okay, it ended up actually being maybe 3 years. And what happened was the state of Illinois centralized the child support system. They made it better. They upgraded the system. That really hurt people like me, because that's kind of how we thrived, was it was such chaos. But no, they put money behind it. They centralized it. They improved their collections. There were less people needing people like me. And I didn't see that coming. I'm not going to act like, oh, I saw the writing on the wall. But what happened with me was I started doing my PR, and I would have people on the side saying, yeah, we saw you on the news, or we read about you. And so I would freelance, I guess lack of a better word. I write a press release here, write an article, send an email, and they give me $200 or a couple hundred dollars to do it. So I was kind of freelancing on the PR side. And I just like the idea of, it's fun. If you've never been on television, it's fun to have a camera crew come out. It's fun to go to the studio. It's fun to have a reporter call you and you do a story, and then they send a photographer over to you. I'm in a very exciting and fun industry, you know, unless there's some kind of crisis with the whole other side of PR. But for what I do, it is fun. So I enjoyed it. And like I said, at the time, they were changing the child support laws and systems. And so then I started doing a little bit more freelancing. I still didn't have a full-fledged PR firm yet. So I just started doing more of the PR stuff. And that's kind of how I got into what I'm doing now.
Okay, so when did you make a more serious jump where you said, this business with the collection of child support's going down, I need to kind of get serious about what I'm going to do? And when was it when you finally decided you're going to put all your energies into PR, public relations?
The state of Illinois had everything in place. You know, they were hitting on all cylinders. So business was harder and harder to come by. I would do newspaper advertising where you paid to be in there and it wouldn't work. I'd do more type of paid advertising with results diminishing more and more. So I decided, okay, I'll do more on the PR side. And back then you could email the heck out of people and it wasn't spam. So I sent out thousands of emails, just sat at my computer and just emailed information on, you know, if you need help with publicity. And I would get a client here and there. Then I went back to postcards because I fell away from that for a while, not thinking, okay, well, if it worked for the child support, it would work for this business. So I went back to postcards. I got introduced to joint ventures, and that's actually how I went from just barely making a living to six figures was because of joint ventures, and I learned all about joint ventures in Jay Abraham's book. I had never heard of the concept before.
Tell me about your first joint venture deal.
It was with a company in New Jersey.
How'd you get the company? How were y'all introduced?
They sold PR products. Like, they'll sell you a book on writing press releases. They'll sell you CDs of media outlets, but they won't actually do the PR for you. So when I approached them, I said, okay, well, you're selling the actual product to do it yourself, but we all know most of these people buy stuff and put it on the shelf. I actually write press releases. I actually contact the media. So he saw that there was synergy, and he had a list of just under 85,000 subscribers. So in one of his newsletters, he talked about marketing and then plug his products. And then he said, well, for those of you who want a professional to do it, he sent the email out. I got bombarded with calls. We did $30,000 that first month, another $20,000 the following month. All of that was because of the joint venture endorsement. You know, him saying, here's an expert that can do the PR for you. Obviously, you're interested in PR because you bought my book and my CD and tapes. But most people still aren't going to feel comfortable, and they want to pay somebody to do it. And that catapulted me to where I was able to do that full-time. And I haven't worked for anybody. I haven't had a job. I've been doing this full-time, taking care of my wife, raising four kids full-time ever since.
One joint venture started it all.
One joint venture.
What was y'all's agreement with the money?
50-50.
So whatever physical work you did in designing PR, he would get half of that?
He got half, and I was happy to pay it. The time and the money and an expense it would have taken me to reach and let 85,000 people know who I am versus him already having that relationship and they already knowing him and having the credibility and trust, well worth it. And I've done probably close to 100 joint ventures over the last 10 years.
Similar stuff like that?
It's similar, but they vary as far as who gets what. They aren't all 50-50. Some are a little lower. One guy, well known, he got close to 60. But to be in that world, to play around on that level, I'm like, okay, here, you can have 60.
You're doing physical work with individual clients. How were you able to scale that? Were you doing everything yourself when you had maybe 20, 30, 40 people wanting your services? How did you handle the growth of that?
Good question. And I had to learn the hard way because as something as intensive as PR, I thought I could handle 20, 30 clients, no problem. And so I had to learn that the hard way. And what hurt me was I never took a PR course. I never worked at a PR firm. I didn't take public relations in college. Remember, I had a paralegal degree. I studied publicity because I read about it in Dan Kennedy's book, and then I mastered it kind of self-taught. But the operation side, I didn't know anything about that. So I had to learn the hard way. A lot of angry calls, a lot of refund requests, a lot of all that until I figured out, okay, I need to get help with some of this. So, again, that's when the outsourcing, that's when the hiring, that's when all these other things come into play that you have to learn to do. But I didn't do that right away. I didn't even think to do that.
Were you winging it when these first people called you, or did you have a standard fee that you would charge for a press release? What were some of the services and some of the packages you were selling, and how much could you get for them back then?
My average price back then was $500, and I probably gave people $5,000 worth of work. I didn't know how to price my services. I was happy to have somebody pay me $500. And so I would get them on radio, magazines, TV, just whatever I could get for them. The beauty of the industry I'm in is nobody goes on Oprah, nobody goes in the San Diego Tribune and not tell anybody. That's one of the beauties of what I do is they always brag, and now you have social media. So they were going to tell their friends, their colleagues, their bowling buddies and Little League parents, hey, I'm going to be on Evening News. Hey, read the Tribune tomorrow. I'm going to be in the paper. How'd that happen, Mike? Who did that for you? So I got a lot of word of mouth that way. But as far as the pricing, it was low. I didn't know what to price it. The joint venture I did, we charged $600. Of course, $300 of that had to go to the company who endorsed me. So I made $300 for each client signed up. I really made money in volume because we signed up so many. And you just learn and grow.
So what would they get for $600? You'll write them a press release?
Write the press release depending on where they lived, all of the media in their area, whatever industry they're in. You know, every industry has trade journals and newsletters and industry publications. So we target them as well. Then we do some of the national. And the national thing was so crazy because most people don't know if you want to be on a national talk show, Dr. Phil, Oprah when she had her show, 2020, Steve Harvey show, Good Morning America, all you have to do is just go to their website, and there's a link that says be on the show. And you can click, and you can see 40 or 50 topics that they're looking for guests right now. I've probably gotten over 24 clients on major talk shows just using that strategy. The first time I got a call from Oprah, and I've gotten 2 calls from her, well, her producers, not her, because I went to her site, clicked on Be On The Show, saw something that fit my business, my expertise, filled out the form online. Within an hour, producer's calling me.
Tell us a story. Think back maybe in the early days from that first joint venture. Can you remember any one client that sticks out in your mind that paid for your services and then you got some pretty interesting and dramatic results for them?
There was an accounting firm on the East Coast, and it was like taking candy from a baby because we just piggybacked off. It was around tax season. I want to really stress, one of the easiest ways to get PR is what we call piggybacking. Just tie in or piggyback what's already going on in the news. You don't always have to sell the news media on your story or what it is you do. Just piggyback off something that they are already covering. Another way I phrase that is to go where the cameras are. So if you know the media is going to be at a certain event or going to be somewhere, then you can show up. But I'll give you an example, too. I had a client just this year. This is fresh. He's a goals expert, and CNN was doing the New Year's resolution story. It was a no-brainer. We knew they were doing the story. He was a best-selling author in this space. And so we just piggybacked off what we knew they're already going to be covering.
That's a good idea. All right, so you did this joint venture. You said you've done 100 joint ventures like this. Can you share maybe another story of a joint venture that just overwhelmed you where you couldn't believe the amount of response?
I did a joint venture with an incorporation company, entity, planning, structuring, whatever you want to call it. Basically, they just incorporated your business. And the reason I got to them was what I learned from Jay Abraham. And the way he teaches joint ventures is whatever business you're in, all you have to do is just figure out what somebody needs before they do business with you, while they're doing business with you, and then where do they go, what do they buy after they've already bought from you. Another way of saying that was, if I'm in PR, okay, what does someone have to do before they do business with me? A, they need a business. The soccer mom's not going to hire me as her publicist, so they need a business. Okay, if you're going to have a business, what do you need to do? If it's other than your name, you have to register that. You can do that on a local level, the county level, or you can incorporate. So I was like, okay, let me get a list of incorporation services. I got a list of the counties around here where I live, and I got a list of attorneys who incorporate, you know, does corporate law. So I went to those people. There was a incorporation company in Nevada that I ended up doing the JV with because, again, they're incorporating new businesses. I do PR for businesses, and then we did a promotion, and that was another one. What surprised me there was I made a $1,500 sale in 6 minutes. Email went out. This company, again, all of this works because of the endorsement and the credibility that the host has. And so if they say, okay, they have that trust with their client base, then the sky's the limit. So that to me was the main thing, is just he took care of his clients. And when he said, okay, you know, you guys could use publicity, here's what it is, here's the guy that can help you, I mean, the orders is like instantly.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. When you approached him, for any listener who's got this great idea, they like what you're saying, they're saying, hey, I can do this with my product or service, take the listener through from the time you approached this company who provided these incorporation services. What did you say to them? Did you call them up? Did you send an email? Did you mail a letter? How did you get the account, and how did you negotiate the deal, and what was the split? And did you sign a contract?
This particular deal was email. And remember, this is was way before the spam. Everybody was looking forward to getting their emails. So this was done via email, and I found him. I kind of cheated. I'm starting to learn that in business, it's okay to stack the deck in your favor. And this guy was a protege of Jay Abraham, so he was already familiar with what joint ventures were. So that helps, too. If you're talking about joint ventures and you're talking to someone who's clueless, who's never heard of the word, who's never had an idea, then it's a much more uphill battle. But if you're talking to someone who's familiar with joint ventures, that's a whole different level. So this guy was familiar with joint ventures. So a lot of the education and the hand-holding I didn't have to do because he already knew about joint ventures. So I approached him. He saw the, again, it was an email. He saw the synergy, like, okay, this is great. We talked on the phone, I think, once or twice. Next thing you know, he's putting me in this email newsletter, blasting it out. But I've sent joint venture requests via fake UPS letters, fake FedEx letters, and I can explain what a fake UPS or FedEx letter is. But anyway, I would send them out that way. I sent them out through regular mail. I didn't do very many calls to get a joint venture. I always let a letter or a fax or, you know, like I said, a fake UPS letter go before me.
It's real simple. You just do a deal. I'll do this for you if you do this for me. That's basically all it is.
Yeah, and you want some type of credibility. The more influential a person is that you're approaching or a company, then you're going to find that they get approached for those type of deals a little more often than others. But if it's on the local level, if it's not a Tony Robbins type level, then you can call them or send them a letter. Hey, let's do a deal. I'll do this. I'll do that. I was going after Chet Holmes and J. Conrad Levinson. But to do deals in your own backyard, you don't need really any of that. I would send a letter with an article so they knew I was credible. And that's one of the things, too. If you guys want to get PR, I don't care if it's just one article that you can put in the letter or include with the letter that you're going to send to people. Or if you're going to call them, send them a link. Like I sent you the link to when I was in CNBC, the doors that that opened, the skepticism, the fear, the rejection that comes down simply because they feel, okay, this guy must be pretty good if he's in Fortune, if he's on CNBC, you know, the LA Times wrote about it, or whatever paper it is. So I'm a big believer in, even if it's on the small local level, get a couple articles written about you, and then when you approach someone, put that in there with it.
Yeah, that social proof helps. And I got to thank you, because I'm just thinking back, you really were the guy who got me hooked up into some of these great interviews, some of the bigger names. And that made me realize the bigger player out there that I'm interviewing, the better for me, because they got a lot of credibility, they've got a lot of recognition, and I get to piggyback on all that. And when I collectively have a collection of interviews with big players, that just elevates the perceived value of my site. So thank you for that. I think you maybe set me up with J. Conrad Levinson.
And it'd be funny because before we did this call, I went to your site. And before you called, I had counted 10 people that I set you up with. But you can send me a check.
Maybe I'm paying you back right now. How about that? No, I appreciate that. That was great because I didn't have the confidence to go to these people. You already had an end. You are already servicing them as clients, and your job is to get them good interviews and good publicity. So it worked out well for both of us.
Yeah, and I had enough respect for your interview, your website, or your interview space because J. Abraham's time, he was, I think at the time, 5,000 miles an hour. Levinson, Les Brown, Bill Bartman, Vic Conant, Joe Vitale, Laurel Langmire. I can go down the line. So when they hired me, it was like, okay, I need something that's going to be the highest and best use of my time. Does he get traffic to his site, and what type of people go to his site, and what type of people listen to him? So I couldn't do the WARK in Arkansas. I couldn't do the small, no-listener type interviews. It had to be something where it really benefited them. Your site did that. It was just all hardcore business. And so, again, you were one of the go-to people that I went to, and just about every single one that I pitched to you did your show or did your interview because they recognized the value. You know, I saw it early on, but you stood out. You're a little different than everybody else doing the podcast. There's no way that these guys are going to do those small podcasts.
Well, that's great. Now it's much easier for me to get the kind of interviews I want. It's probably always easier when I have someone endorse me, like you sharing my site with some of your clients. That's the easiest way. And I'm kind of re-energized in doing more interviews. I got burned out for a couple years, but now what I'm doing is I'm bringing in reporters or interviewers to interview under the hardtofindseminars.com
brand. I just talked to a guy yesterday who's on board. He's ready to go and interview. And I've got a health correspondent, Kristen Costello. She's got a radio show, and she does incredible interviews with top-selling publishers on health and wellness-related topics, which I don't know if you've heard any of those. You maybe hear her saying, this is Kristen Costello reporting for Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. So I'm starting to branch out and use other interviewers to bring the content to the space because there's only so many hours I can do it.
Right, or you can do the Alec Mondozian model and have the guest interview himself. I was part of his faculty when I did my interview on PR. There was one technical guy, and of course if something goes wrong, but you call in, you have your notes, you have your questions, and he records you. There's no interviewer there. He's really hands-off.
That's interesting. So his concept was he has people call in and do the interview themselves, and does he ask for the rights for the interview, or it's just so you can produce your own interview?
It's jointly owned, and he still does it to this day, I believe, where it's kind of joint ownership. Like, if you record it, I mean, you can do what you want to with it. He records it because it's content for his subscribers. And they prepped me before. It was like, okay, just have your outline of what you're going to cover. You know, nobody's going to interview you. You call in, there's a technical guy that's going to record it, but, you know, he's just there in case something goes wrong. Totally hands-off.
Like, yeah, but it's more a monologue. You don't have that back and forth and that ping-pong and that tennis game going like there is with an interview. It's just a different ball game.
It is, but my thing, too, is content is king. If I told you right now, Michael, how to make $1 million a month right now, would you care if somebody interviewed me or if I did a monologue?
No, you're right. I wouldn't care.
And it's to each his own. Some people would rather listen. Some people would rather read a book. Some people like the interview style, Q&A. That's just his business model. We're all professionals. We're very good at what we do. We just went in there, nailed it, recorded it, and then went on about our business. But, see, that forced me to really give great content because it was a little different. And that's why I just asked you this question. If something is going to be life-changing to you, if you could get Jennifer Lopez's phone number, would you care if she wrote it on a napkin or if she put it in your phone? You got her number. Who cares how you got her?
All right, tell me about another joint venture. How did you get hooked in with Conrad Levinson? Were you able to do a joint venture with him? Did he endorse you? Did Abraham endorse you?
And they all kind of link together. You'll find these guys have been friends and partners and buddies, you know, for a long, long, long time. And so once you get in with one, you know, kind of like if you deliver the domino effect. So that happened with, I think, the first well-known heavy hitter was Chet Holmes. And I got introduced to him when he and Jay Abraham were doing the PEQ. I got all the free PEQ stuff you could get. Tapes, teleseminar. I mean, that was a $15,000 seminar.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
Do you still have all the videos and tapes at home?
You know what? Up until my wife made me clean out my office, and I hate myself. I go back and try to find stuff. I was like, oh, we did that spring cleaning, and I just got rid of all that.
I just had a lady who called me from one of my direct mail letters that I sent out probably 8 years ago, a Chinese lady in California, and I bought her whole collection of PEQ1 CDs, the videos, the cassette tapes, the transcripts, and then a bunch of other J stuff, and it was all there. The covers and the tape binders were kind of beat up, but I picked all that stuff up for $125, and I did an email out to my list. I knew one person would still want the old stuff, and I sold it for about $1,200.
Did you ever do an interview with Sanford J. Beres? He wrote 97 Marketing Secrets.
I did not.
I thought maybe he was one of the ones, but he was at the library and they had a used book sale and somebody had dumped a whole bunch of J. Abraham stuff there and he got it for $5. People don't know what they're sitting on.
Well, I'll tell you, the Abraham stuff, the market for the pre-owned material is really down. I mean, there's not much stuff on eBay, and if it is, it's selling very inexpensively. Plus, Abraham is selling this digital library on a hard drive, and all that shit's been pirated. You can pick all that stuff up for free on these torrent sites.
Yeah, I remember getting those promotions. You can get the USB and the encyclopedia and all that stuff on the little thing.
All right, so look, Chet Holmes, he's a smart guy, and he hires you to do PR. So he has high expectations. So what were his expectations? What did you charge the guy? And what kind of results did you bring? What did you do to deliver?
It took me 2 years. I don't want to paint this picture like I just picked up the phone and nailed this guy. It took 2 years of me staying in his face. And if you're familiar with him anyway, he called that the Dream 100, where you just pick who you want to do business with, and you just become relentless in targeting them.
How did you stay in his face?
I would send a letter. I send a fax. I send an email, like every other month, a letter, a fax, an email, every other month. I just stayed in his face. And then finally, he was doing a seminar with Jay Levinson, Gorilla Meets Karate Master, three-day, $3,000 per person event. I called him at the right time. He said, you know what? You've been in my face. I'm going to see what you can do. I'll pay you $1,000 a month to get some PR for my seminar. So we did that. It was in the Bay Area. He paid me $1,000 a month. I picked up my last check when I got there to the event.
All right, so you made $3,000 from him?
Yeah, to promote the seminar.
All right, so what was the first thing you did to promote it?
I had to get the information for the event, what it's about, the who, what, when, and where. Then I kind of used his background, you know, successful businessman. He was homeless for 2 years, so I put that story in there. And then we got him on the radio, the San Francisco Examiner, the Chronicle, a couple of other media. I only targeted the Bay Area because I didn't have a lot of time. The thing with PR is you have to pay attention to lead times and deadlines. So because the event was 3 months away, there's no way I was going to get an entrepreneur, Fast Company, Inc., success because they work 4 to 6 months out. We didn't have that kind of time, so I knew I couldn't go after the hardcore publications like that.
Do you think he understood that, and did y'all discuss what the expectations were? With PR, I think a lot of people have this perception, there's going to be no guarantee. You're going to do the best you can. It's a monthly retainer. Isn't that the standard charging method for a PR firm? You pay a monthly retainer usually. What do you tell people when they say, well, what am I getting for my $1,000 a month?
Okay, well, in his case, he actually owned a PR firm like a decade before, so he kind of came into it with a whole different mindset because he had a PR firm and an ad agency. So he was kind of different. But to answer that question for all of the other people, that is a tough hurdle to get over because at the end of the day, if you don't deliver, all they see is they paid you this money and they didn't get any stories out of it. But there's long-term benefits. You're taking someone who the media doesn't know at all, never heard of, unless you're Tony Robbins or somebody, establishing credibility, getting them to know who you are, to getting them to want to do a story on you. And I've had some cases, I don't bat 1,000, I've had cases where nothing has ever worked. I don't rely so much on the name of the person, unless it's a well-known name and everybody wants to talk to that person. It really comes down to the angle or the hook of the story. So that's why I like the piggybacking tie-in type deals. That's why I like going to these websites or the equivalent. Like, you know how earlier I said you can get on any talk show, just go to the site and click on Be On The Show. The equivalent to that for print media is an editorial calendar. So in advance, you can pick any magazine you want to be in, call the advertising department, or go online and click on the advertising button and get a media kit, and you're going to see an editorial calendar, and that shows you every article, every story they're working on for the entire year. Now you just tie your business into what they're going to cover. So if you know Forbes is doing an issue in June on sales training, and you're in sales training, then you ride that wave.
Do they publish these editorial calendars for the specific reason for the PR people so they can come at them with stories that are related to what they're doing?
No, they publish it for the advertising. Because, like, let's say, for example, Oprah Magazine is doing a plastic surgery issue for June. They want their advertisers to call plastic surgeons and say, hey, we're doing a special issue on plastic surgery. You got to be in our magazine. That's all advertising related. PR people just put a different spin on it. Like, okay, if you're going to highlight plastic surgery, then we know there are going to be articles in there. But that's not for us. That's for the advertising team.
But you can use that intelligence to your advantage.
Yeah, that's how I leveraged being able to almost guarantee. I can't guarantee, but the way I do PR, I can virtually guarantee you're going to get stories. I use the Las Vegas model where they say the house always wins, but, you know, the house doesn't always win, but they win most of the time. So I stacked the deck in my favor when it comes to PR, and I just gave you two strategies right there, the editorial calendar and piggybacking off the national news, and also just going to the website of these news stations, to where if you're looking for something, all I have to do is say, hey, I have this expert who's an expert in what you're looking for. Now it's a beauty contest. Either you're going to interview him or someone like him, but if you don't have anybody else to interview, I win by default.
That's beautiful. Go back to the Chet Holmes story. So what were you able to get for him? It was a seminar 3 months away. You were able to get some radio media for him?
Yeah, radio. He did some of the local newspapers. He was happy because he understood he didn't have a whole lot of time. He didn't give me 6 months. I didn't have a whole year to plan out his PR strategy. So he did the radio stuff. He got the write-ups and the articles. That was cool. I go out there to the event. one, to pick up my check, but then just to be there and finally meet him face to face. So then we're in the bathroom getting ready to go back to the session. And he says, you know what, I'm covering PR in the second half. You got anything you want to say? And I'm like, yeah, sure. That was my very first time ever on stage, unplanned, unscripted. He asked me in the bathroom, like, cool. Went out there. The very first time I ever spoke on PR was at his event. And then that's when I knew speaking is another strategy people should use to grow their business.
So were you nervous as hell?
I didn't know enough to be nervous. It was just like, oh, yeah, I got some stuff. I didn't have enough time to think. I think had he told me before I flew out there, nerves would have had time to set in. But when he says, okay, you're going on stage in 5 minutes, I didn't have time. I didn't have to wing it because I knew the stuff. You know what I mean? It's like if I said, okay, Mike, I need you to come to the Dan Kennedy conference. We'll fly you in 2 hours. You got to go on stage and talk about direct marketing. You don't have to wing. You know that stuff. I could wake you up from a coma and you can get people. PR was in me at that point. So I just told people, here's how to get in the Associated Press and tell 200 million people about your business for free. Here are 21 ways to get publicity. I just ran off all the stuff that I knew. And then when I got off stage, like people come up, oh, we want to work with you. And that's when I knew, like, okay, speaking is another way of marketing. Here are the three things I put, the best ways to sell, the easiest way to sell. PR is one, because it comes with an implied endorsement or implied credibility from the media outlet. If you're an Entrepreneur magazine, if you're on Oprah, we automatically assume you're the best or you're good because you were in that media outlet. So PR is great. Joint ventures are great because it's an endorsement from somebody else who has the recognition, the trust, and the credibility with their audience. The other thing is speaking, because now you're seen as an expert and you're teaching people how to do things. Now they see you as the expert. Now they want to work with you. And so the largest deals I've closed, and as we get into the million-dollar client, he heard me speak. And so everybody else, even with postcards, even with emails, even with telemarketing, there's this process you got to go through to build trust and rapport and credibility. We all have to go through that process. But one of these three methods that I mentioned, you kind of leapfrog over that.
So what happened after you speaking at that event? Did you have some immediate results as far as client work?
Yeah, I signed up a couple. There were Inc. 500 companies that were there that pretty much hired me on the spot. Meaning, okay, as soon as we get back to the office, we're going to work with you. That led to me proactively looking to speak. And I've spoken for Jay. I've spoken for Harvecker. I've spoken for Tony Robbins. I've spoken for Les Brown. I've spoken for, you name the person, I've been on their stage. Because now I understand that that's a proactive way to grow your business.
And you're speaking all on your subject, PR.
PR.
That's the end of part one. Please continue to the second part of the public relations interview.